think what we'll do is we won't go pasuk by pasuk, but we'll talk about it more generally. And I've mentioned the past few weeks how the special value of learning about these alleles, which are not necessarily practical in our day, but bring to us special value in the learning. And each time we've kind of added an element to why there's a value in learning about it. So we talked about the construction of the Mishkan and the Korbanos. And last week when we talked about Saras, we said how there's an additional element on top of that, beyond what we talked about with the Korbanos and the Mishkan. So here, even though you'll think Metzora doesn't have that much that's different from Tazria, so whatever we said last week, we could just continue this week. But the truth is, we can add a little bit more to that general message, because focusing here specifically on the Tara process, that gives us an additional element to think about. And that really is what it's all about. The idea that we should come back from the Saras. And in fact, I think we did mention last week that the reason Chafetz Chaim explains why we don't have Tzaras b'zman hazeh is because it wouldn't serve any purpose, because the whole purpose of Tzaras is to be redemptive, is to give us an opportunity to learn from the experience and to come back from it. And if we don't have the context in which to have the purification process, so then there's no point. So if anything, to focus on learning the details of the Tara process is really even more beneficial than learning about the Tzaras. So that, which is the subject of our Aliyah today, has even greater value or different values. So that's something that we can ponder today. And especially if we don't actually bring these offerings to think about what they may represent and what they may symbolize, that's something that has special opportunities for us. So we'll spend a few minutes doing that, thinking about the messages of the Tara process. In particular, this Aliyah, you'll see a little bit of synergy, focuses on the difference between the korbanos of the rich and the poor, the dal and the asher, and what exactly is the message that's contained within that, within the korban and within the offering and within the differences. So we'll talk about that a little bit in a general sense. We won't necessarily go pasuk by pasuk, except for just kind of getting the aliyah started, where it begins with the idea of yimdalhu. If the person is indigent, if the person is poor, then yodo maseges, he is not able to obtain everything that would otherwise be spoken about. V'lokach keves echad asham l'tnufa, so then let him take one lamb as an asham to be waved, l'chaper alav, that should be an atonement for him, v'saren solos echad balu b'shemen l'mincha v'log l'shemen. That he's able to get two turtle doves or two pigeons. Okay, so it continues. So this is going to be what he's going to bring if he is a dal. So let's talk about this in general. So Rav Sham Shnufal Hirsch has extensive comment over here, where he notes that as far as the asham of the poor man is the same as the asham of the rich man. And he has kind of a poetic way of saying this, his exact words, but basically that the duty of brotherhood and social justice is the same for the rich and the poor alike. A person's lot, he writes, is not a factor when he's judged for social sins, for which the Asher Metzora is designed to atone. Only the tenor of life as a whole varies with the rich and the poor. Different external conditions call for the testing of different aspects of moral strength. So the Asham Velok Shemen, those are the same for the rich and poor alike. But for the Chattas and the Ola, that's where there's a difference. And these represent the sanctification of life in general. And therefore, That's where the achatas and the ola, that's where it's different. So the main korban he brings as an usher to show that he was meiz like an usher. This is the point that's also emphasized by the Oznayim LaTorah of the Litzker Rav. And here we have the theme of gaiva, which is one of the associated averos that brings about saras. The Gemara in Erechin, which says that the spiritual averos that cause saras, lists all of them. So they're addition to Lashon Hara, but they're also not necessarily so separated from Lashon Hara. So gaiva is also there, but gaiva is a part of Lashon Hara. The whole notion that you can judge other people and that you sit in judgment of the person as a whole, and also that you can decide that this is a circumstance where you think it's appropriate to speak Lashon Hara about them. You know, the role of gaiva comes up in a couple of ways when it comes to Lashon Hara. Even if your person is not aware of Lashon Hara as an issue at all, it's the very fact that they judge somebody is a gaivadik kind of thing. But then, even if they're, let's say, a little firmer about it, and they appreciate that Lashon Hara is an issue, but they are quick to decide it's l'toelas because they have an outsized perception of their role in the picture. So it's also gaiva. So a person who makes a bad judgment as to the Lashon Hara necessity could also be a function of gaiva. So here the person treats himself too seriously. So he brings the korban, the main korban he brings like an usher. But still, we emphasize in Dalhu, so even though he acted with the Gassus Ruach, so Hashem has Rachmanis on him, the Aznayim LaTorah notes, and he gives them a Pesach to Tshuva. So it doesn't just say Im Lo Sasig, but also says in Dalhu. Now, here there's a little synergy to note, because the Sifra, the Medrash, picks up on the seemingly extra language here, the fact that it says all of these words, that im dalhu ve'ed yodo masages, you would think you don't need to say both. So here, first of all, the synergy point, why do you have to say im dalhu ve'ed yodo masages? Because maybe you would have thought that im dalhu is relative, that maybe it means compared to what he used to be. In other words, what's that evocative of? De machzoro. Right, so let's say somebody used to be rich, and now he's not the madrega that he used to be, so then maybe we should say that that should entitle him to bring the korban of an ani. So therefore, the Torah has to emphasize not that we mean relative terms, but strictly speaking, ein yado masagas. Or the Medrash says we need both dal and yado masagas, because maybe let's say a person is actually rich, but right now he's not able to access the animal, so maybe he doesn't have to try so hard. So no, we emphasize that it's only because he can't get it because he's poor. So that's why he's able to bring the korban ani. So the Medrash emphasizes that we need both. It's also an interesting point to the Meshech Chachma, where he highlights the fact that dal means lacking, literally, or also a person is alone. And the Torah is emphasizing here that really, strictly speaking, somebody else could have brought the korban for him. But he's not only cash poor, but he's also friendless. And that's also being highlighted. So this represents the fact that his transgression has probably contributed to his isolation. And that is relevant to the whole nature of how he got the tzaras in the first place. And it's worth noting at this point that Parshas Metzorah specifically, again, as much as Tazria and Metzorah, you think we're seeing the same things repeated, but Metzorah specifically is where the Medrash appears that was the inspiration for the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, or for the title, at least, to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. that the Medrash in the beginning of Parshas Metzora, which has provoked much fascinating commentary, tells the story of the Rochel, which may be an ironic usage, but the peddler who came to town and said that he is selling the elixir of life. And when everyone gathered around to see what kind of potion he has, he turned out to be selling actually not potions, but psukim. And he had a text there, and he read, Mihaisha Chafetz Chaim Ohev Yamim L'Rov Tov. You want to know how to live a long life, so you should Netzor L'Shon Chameros Vasach Amidaber Mirma. You should be careful how you speak. So that idea, which the Chafetz Chaim took for his sefer, Chafetz Chaim, that you have to be careful in how you speak, so apparently he impressed the crowd very much with this. They weren't disappointed. He didn't seem to be selling snake oil. And even Rav Yanai, who you would think was already familiar with this pasuk, he was very impressed. So the Mefarshim have a lot to say, and there's much written about this, as to what's the chiddush of this medrash. That, okay, he just read the pasuk, so it wasn't a potion. All right, they were able to accept that it was a spiritual idea, but still, what's the chiddush? So among the many interpretations is that Mihaisha Chafetz Chaim Ohev Yomim L'Ros Tov, he's not just talking about Olam Haba, he's not just talking about a spiritual benefit. He's saying that if you want a good life in this world, you should appreciate the value of Netzor L'Shon Chameros Fasach Amidaber Mirma. That the people who are engaging in Lashon Hara, they're not just trading away their Olam Haba, they're losing their Olam Hazeh also. And they are alienating people who understand what's going on. And there's a little bit of the Mida Keneged Mida and the recognition that as much as you think you are causing harm to other people when talking about them, it ends up bouncing back on you and people catch on to the one who is the spreader of gossip and they end up distancing him. So here the Torah says in Dalhu, it's not just that he is poor in terms of cash, but he's not going to have friends either who are going to decide to bail him out, who are going to step forward and are going to contribute. And this is what the Meshech Chachma seems to be tapping into. The Gemara Maseches Erchin has a number of other drushes on this pasuk where it notes as far as dinim that if somebody would step in and try to help out with the kaparis here, so what if the Metzora was an Ani and the Noder who wants to help on his behalf, what if he's an Usher? So how do we view him? So that is treated as an Usher. What if the Metzora is an Usher and the Noder is an Ani? Also treated as an Usher. What if they're both Aniyim? What if the Metzora and the Noder, they're both Aniyim? So then that's treated as an Ani. So the Torah Tumima says, okay, that seems to be pretty obvious. Why would you see it any other way if they're both Aniyim? So then presumably, that should have the status as an Ani. So he writes that the Chiddush is that you might have thought that maybe we only have Rachmanis on the Metzora because, okay, the Metzora himself, he has no choice, so the Torah has Rachmanis on him that he should bring a Korban Ani. But if somebody else decides to step in, you say, okay, this is the rule. The rule is, this is it, no less. So Kamash Mulan know that even the person who volunteers, if he happens to be an Ani, so then he gets to have the Ani treatment. It's also noteworthy, the Torah Tumim points out, the others point out, that there's a diuk in the language that regarding an usher, it says lichaper, but regarding the ani, it says vichaper. And the suggestion is that for a rich person, so the gaiva, as bad as it is, it's more natural because everybody's always treating him like a rich person, like a person of stature. So it's understandable, it goes to his head. So then, okay, goes through this process, that's it, that's the kapara. But for the ani, ironically, so the fact that he has a gasus ruach, it's more unnatural, it's more self-driven. So therefore requires more of a kapara. So therefore, this is only a part of it. So it says vichaper, this contributes to the kapara, but it's not the whole thing. Because Nayim Utara also adds that there's a continued reference. It keeps saying again and again, Im Dalhu. And that it says because you have to keep checking, make sure that he actually is an Ani. Because one of the problems that contributes to Tzaras, we mentioned the whole list, is also the person has Tzaras Ayin, the person is very stingy. So if he's stingy, so we have to worry that maybe he's actually not as poor as he thinks he is. So to make sure the person actually is entitled, and this is again a little bit synergistic with what we've been talking about, to make sure that a person really is entitled to bring a carbon of the ani, so we should keep checking. So we say imdalhu throughout to establish that that's a necessary standard here. He also notes that the Torah describes the ani's process at length so that you shouldn't feel inferior to the ani, to the usher, rather. The Netziv also comments that here the language imdalhu is in the present tense, and other places it's in the future, because in other contexts they bring the korban, they'd wait until the regel. So maybe at that point they'd be rich, so they'd have to bring a korban asher. So the Torah is saying that you should only be mafresh a korban ani if you think you're still going to be poor then when the regel comes. But here, the Torah is talking to the Mitzora, who needs to purify right away in order to be able to come in, so it's talking in the present tense. It's also a very interesting question here. When we refer to these two different types of karbanos for an ani and an asher, so what if it switched? What if you have an ani who pushes himself and brings a korban asher, or vice versa? So let's say the asher does bring a korban ani. So should we say, okay, that's at least a valid korban on some level, so he is yotze? So this is dealt with in the Mishnah in the Gayim, in Parak Yudalim, where it says that if an ani brings a korban asher, so he is yotze, but not the other way around. That if an usher brings the korban of an ani, then he's not yotze. So the Gemara in Maseches Yuma on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara quotes that din by Mitzora in the context of discussing what the din is by Metame Mikdash, the korban Olav Yore by Metame Mikdash, with this sliding scale based on financial capacity. So there the Gemara has a machlokes. So when it comes to that, the Metame Mikdash, so it's a machlokes, what happens if there is a switch in terms of bringing the proper korban. So when it comes to Mitzora, so here the Mishnah says what the story is, that if an ani brings if an ani brings the korban of an asher, he's yotze, but vice versa, he's not. An asher bringing the ani is not yotze. But by metame mikdash, an asher bringing a korban of an ani, it's a machlokes. So why is that a machlokes? So the Gemara says, maybe it's only true by Mitzora. Only by Mitzora, you could have an issue that an asher can't bring for a korban ani. Because the language of Zos Torah Samitzora, maybe that's specific to a Mitzora, maybe you can't derive from there to other things. And some of the Mefarshim suggest that maybe that also goes to the specific Kapara of Mitzora, because Mitzora, as we mentioned, also correlates to the Avera of Tzaras Ayin, stinginess. So maybe when it comes to stinginess, so we have an extra kpeda that if the person is going to be stingy in his assessment, so then he's missing the whole point. So for an usher to bring a korban that's not appropriate for him, to bring a korban that's meant for an ani, so it's really going to be a betrayal of the whole message. You can see he missed the whole point, that here he was stingy, and he got harassed because of it, and then when it came time to effect the kapara, so he brought a korban that itself displayed stinginess. So you could see that he's missing out on the kapara. Once again, the whole idea here, it does correlate to Lashon Hara as well, because stinginess is not separate and apart from Lashon Hara, but a part of the motivation for Lashon Hara is a scarcity mentality, not necessarily in terms of material resources, but in terms of praise and benefit and the belief that there's just not enough covet to go around. So sometimes people are concerned there's not enough material resources to go around, but Lashon Hara is sometimes motivated by the belief that there's not enough covet to go around, so I'm not going to be able to be treated the way I want to be treated if this person gets too much attention or this person gets too much covet, so therefore I have to knock him down. So this Tzaras Ayin is, again, its own midah, but it's also something that is connected to the larger Lashon Hara issue. So Lamaisa, in terms of the switching of Karbanos, the Rambam writes in Halachos Shagagos, in Perek Yod Halachi Gimel, that if an Ani brings a Karban of an Asher, so then he is Yotzei, but the other way around, an Asher brings the Karban of an Ani, he's not Yotzei. So the Rambam apparently is understanding this to be true for everything. It's true for Metzorah, that much we know from the Mishnah in the Gaim, and he's assuming that it's true for Metamei Mikdash also, that point that was debated in the Gemara and Yuma, whether or not it has the same din of the Metzorah, so the Rambam is assuming that it does, that Metzorah and Metamei Mikdash do have the same din, that, yes, we know that in both cases the Ani could bring like the Asher, but also in both cases the Asher cannot bring like the Ani. But what's more surprising is a ruling of the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch in Kuf Chav Gimel, where he talks about Olav Yored for the Metamei Mikdash, there the Sefer Achinuch says that the Ani, who's supposed to bring the smaller carbon, he is not Yotze with the bigger carbon. He's not Yotze with the carbon of an Asher. And why not? He says there that the Musar Haskel is that one is not supposed to overspend. That also has a little bit of synergy to what we've been talking about, that the Torah doesn't want you to spend more than you have. And if the Torah gave this limit, and gave this Rachmanis, however you want to term it, that you're not obligated to spend this much on the carbon, so then you shouldn't. And for the Ani to go beyond his means in order to bring a bigger carbon, that wouldn't be right. So that's a chiddush. That's more than we thought. So when it comes to Metzorah, we see Beferish that he is able to, and apparently Sefer Achinuch seems to assume that that's only true by Metzorah, and it wouldn't extend to Metamei Mikdash or other things. So there are a number of approaches as to why that Chiluk should be. Some understand the Sefer Achinuch really thinks you'd be Yotzei B'dieved by other things also. But it sounds like he's assuming that this is a din specific to Metzorah, that only by Metzorah the Ani could bring more, and otherwise the Ani is really only supposed to bring that which is appropriate for the financial means of the Ani, and more than that is really not appropriate. You shouldn't stretch beyond your means, and that's a part of the Musar Haskel here. It goes in both directions, that the Asher shouldn't give too little, that would be wrong, but also for the Ani to give too much, that would also be wrong, and it's an exception for Metzorah. When it comes to Metzorah, the Ani is allowed to give less, that's what the Torah has Rachmanis on him, but he's also allowed, and maybe even Tavol of Bracha, if he would give more. So why should that be? If in general there is a value to not stretching, to not giving more, so why should Metzorah be different? So it could be, just to speculate, it could be that if the idea is that Tzaras Ayin is one of the causes, so I guess it's probably somewhat of a corrective to Tzaras Ayin to be overly generous, so to speak, if you were stingy before, so now you're going in the opposite direction, maybe a little bit in the spirit of the Rambam in terms of the golden mean, and the Vilna Gaon, the whole idea that in general you're supposed to have balanced midos, but sometimes when a person is out of whack in one direction, so he's supposed to go in another extreme in order to bring himself back to that golden mean. So if the person was too stingy, so then maybe it is kedai to overspend on good things, not to overspend in a wasteful way, but to overspend on positive causes in order to bring himself back to a golden mean. But maybe also, in terms of gaiva, maybe there's a similar idea that if a person saw himself as having bigger stature than he does, so then maybe there's a kapara there also, so that, all right, so maybe he saw himself for other purposes as having a greater stature, so at least let him spend on that level, so to speak. You know, let him at least affect his carbon in a way that is befitting that stature, so there's some kind of a kapara perhaps on that level. But just to continue for a few minutes that theme of godless, so to transition, so we know we have Shabbos HaGadol coming up, and indeed it's a big Shabbos for us here in our Ashur. But so why is separate from our Shabbaton, so why is this Shabbos known as Shabbos HaGadol? That's a good question. It's not 100% clear why that is. Rabbi Chalap Zlan Gesund was a rabbi in a shul for more than 50 years. And at some point late in that career, I don't remember exactly when, but he told me that every year in his shul, he gave a different reason why it's called Shabbos HaGadol, and there are probably still many more than that. Zach, you want to mention?
Would it not follow in the same vein as many other, you know, sort of named Shabbatot that, because Pasuk and the Hafta, or in the same way that Shabbat Shuva is, because Shuva,
Yeah, so we will acknowledge your bias to the Haftarahs, which is very happily acknowledged. And yes, that is certainly the most likely answer. But as with many things within Jewish practice, there are often many answers and the right answers and the more interesting answers. And they're all acceptable. Baruch Hashem, Shivim Panim L'Torah. That allows for at least a 70-year career in the rabbinate where you can give a different answer every year. But yes, that certainly is the one that's most likely in terms of how those things go. But, or as I like to say, why is, okay, whatever it is. But there are many additional answers in addition to that most likely approach that the name does come from the Haftorah that has that word in it, and that the Shabbases that have special names do tend to correlate to words in the Haftorah. But there are many other approaches as well. And just to mention a few of them, that the Pri Choresh, who points out that this is the time that they were told to do their first mitzvah of setting aside the lamb for the korban. Chassam Sofer writes that this is the day that the Jews did tshuva, and they came back to Hashem, and Hashem is the Gadol. There's also the notion of the great miracle, and the great miracle, which is the Torah commenting on the fact that the Jews were able to survive the fact that they were tying up for the korban a lamb, and the lamb was the god of the Egyptians. And the fact that they were able to survive that experience, which was a tremendous insult. And the Rambam writes, as one of the reasons for the existing of Korbanos as a whole, that it was a way of rejecting the idolatrous system of the non-Jews who would worship animals. So we took these animals and sacrificed them, but here it all begins with this specific rejection of the Egyptian god. So the fact that we're able to do that is something which was certainly, as far as the Jews, a tremendous statement of turning away from anything idolatrous. So that's impressive for the Jewish people, but it also took great bravery. Because, as you can imagine, it's very inflammatory towards the Egyptian people who had been their enslavers and their masters. So it's both an act of repentance for the Jewish people, so that's godless, but it's also an act of bravery on the part of the Jewish people, so that's godless. But the fact that they survived it also represents a great nes. So that is godless on the part of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So all of that is tremendously significant. And all of that is considered to be godless. But also, it represents to us the time that we establish an aspiration. And there is a notion of setting a path. And godless is about being marked for expansion, so to speak. It's about setting a vision and taking that first step towards nationhood. As you start with that first mitzvah and declaring what you want to be, and saying that Zeh HaKaton Gadol Yeh, as we say at the Bris, that's something which doesn't necessarily reflect the present, but reflects what is yet to come, and has the potential of truth because it's recognized in the moment. So that is something very powerful. And we perhaps need to orient ourselves before Pesach by recognizing that that's the aspiration. So that's a part of what Pesach is able to do for us, and it's a part of the mindset that we need to get ourselves into before Pesach by having the Shabbos that is able to calibrate our perspective with that Haftorah and with that mindset. And also there are many who learn the Haggadah, it's a practice that's brought in the Ramah, to learn the Haggadah before Pesach in order to be prepared. There are those who suggest, in fact, that it's actually a typo, once again, and that perhaps it's Shabbos Haggadah, that is the Shabbos when they would study the Haggadah in preparation for Pesach. Certainly a good idea, because the more prepared you are with the Haggadah, the more meaningful your seder would be. Last year we were especially machmir on this, and we spent the entire year learning Pesachim. This year we didn't have the same schus, but we've had something a little bit similar, because we've been learning Sugyos of Staka for the past few days, and as we've noted, the notion of including the Aniyim in the mentality of Simchas Yontif is very crucial for Simchas Yontif. So to a certain degree, our limud has been calibrated towards enhancing the component of our Yontif that's very crucial for it to be meaningful. But as far as what Pesach is, so there's still aspects of the Seder that we have yet to focus on. So to take time over Shabbos to learn the Haggadah is very meaningful. And that's also a suggestion that that's what Shabbos Haggadah means. But anything that helps us orient our mindset towards the idea that Pesach is the time where we begin our journey towards becoming God's great nation, and that whole mentality of godless is something that puts us on that path. And therefore, to recognize that, yes, this nation is marked for expansion, this is that path of godless, is helpful. And in that sense, that that Tara process that the Metzora goes from, goes on and recognizes that, yes, I diminished myself with the way I spoke, but now I'm on the way back, and I'm ready to rejoin this great nation, and that I have done things to splinter the people through the way I spoke about them, and I've caused division, which itself comes from not seeing people as fully developed individuals and compartmentalizing and seeing only their flaws, and in doing so diminishing myself and making myself isolated from people and less of what I could be, and The Torah process requires a reintegration and being able to see people in their totality and therefore bringing oneself back into the context of the Jewish people and the collective. So we read that parsha and we read about that process on this Shabbos, which is about coming together as the nation that will ultimately bring God's message to the world and to take on that goal of true godless is what we hope to fully make real. So to take on that label of godless is the goal. And to that end, there's also a long-standing practice for the Shabbos to have a drasha associated with it, and the Shibeli Haleket was the one who was quoted as saying that because the drasha has this extra aspect to it, whether it's longer or more noteworthy, so maybe it makes the Shabbos feel longer, and maybe that's enough reason for it to be called Shabbos HaGadol. So I think we've also been mekayim that with this point, so maybe that's a good place to end this year. So we'll stop right now, and I will wish you a wonderful Shabbos now, but I look forward to being able to wish you a wonderful Shabbos on Shabbos in person, and that should itself make it a very great Shabbos.